The Radak in his introduction points out that this is one of those Mizmorei Tehillim which is arranged according to the Aleph Bet. You might not have noticed when you look at first glance. And the reason for that is that there's two letters per line. Aleph Bet, Gimel Dalet, Hey Vav. Until you reach the ninth and the tenth, and there's three letters per line. Hey Tzadi, Kuf, Re, Shin, Taf. See that? Ashrei Ish Yare Et Hashem, which is usually translated as Osher with an Aleph, is translated as happiness. Happiness. There are some who say that it is not happiness because you have an Ishur. An Ishur is a certification, an affirmation. So the word Ashrei to some degree means an affirmation of. I'm affirming you. I am affirming this person. But if you look carefully, it doesn't say Asher Ish. It says Ashrei Ish, and because it's like a dash between the two of them, this is an Ismach. It means the Asherim of a man who's Yirei Elokim. That might mean the happinesses of a person who is, it's not happy is the one. I know it's translated. Happy is the man. And that's where we usually say it. Ashrei Yoshvei Leisecha. You understand? You say that kind of thing. But actually what it means is the happinesses, the thing that makes us fulfilled and affirmed, that makes us feel like we're human, for a person who is Yirei Hashem, is what? We'll soon see. Okay? Malbim points out, immediately, that there is a difference between Yirei Hashem and Yirei Et Hashem. Hard to see how. He tells us as follows. Typically they tell us, and most of the Pirushim tell us, that the two halves is as follows. Somebody who fears God won't do something he was told not to do. B'mitzvotav chafetz me'od. He wants, he desires those mitzvot. Those are the things that we do. So the first half is the mitzvot lo tase. The second half is mitzvot ase. Right? You keep Shabbos, you don't work. That's Yirei Hashem, right? He gets into bed and wakes up 25 hours later. He still hasn't kept Shabbos. The other part is he makes kiddush, he prepares a meal, he davens, he rejoices. You understand? That's the positive aspects of Shabbos. So there's a negative and sometimes within the very same mitzvah, okay, that you have that kind of thing. But the Malbim and Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch both point out that in some places it says Yirei Hashem, and some places it says Yirei Et Hashem, and that this is different. He says just Yirei Hashem implies fear. Yirei Et Hashem, and I will quote to you, Lo mi yirat basar vadam. First of all, the emphasis is he is a man who fears only God. Only God. In other words, he's not afraid of other human beings. He's not afraid of anything else. And Ibn Ezra tells us on the spot, keeps this openly and hiddenly, since he's constantly in the presence of God. But as I told you, Hirsch and Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch and Malbim both tell us that Yirei Hashem is somebody who lives, who's afraid of God. But he says Yirei Et Hashem is Yirat HaRomemut, is standing in awe of his awesome greatness and not for fear of punishment. Because if I say Yirei Elokim, Elokim is din. I'm afraid of what he might do to me. I'm afraid of the thunderbolt that's going to come out. I'm afraid of what this may mean. Or I do something for the sake of reward. Yud Kei Vav Kei is Midas Racham. I stand in awe of the God that is the God of love, the God of unconditional love. And I do what I do because I love him, because I stand in awe of his greatness and his awesomeness. And not because I'm afraid of punishment. In other words, heaven and hell here play no role. B'mitzvotav chafetz me'od, and he wants to fulfill God's commandments me'od. This is clearly a case, says Sfono, of doing something out of love. But I want to explain to you the difference. There is a difference between the word rotze, ratzon, will, and chafetz. Now, when they're translating this, they put the word delights in his greatly. There's nothing about delighting in the word chafetz. The difference between ratzon and chafetz is the following. Chafetz is visceral. I see chocolate and I need chafetza. Even if ani lo rotza. Rotza entails also a cognitive function. So when in Yeshayahu God says that he will name Eretz Yisrael Hefziba, in English it's Hefziba, it means I yearn for her. I want her. Not because it makes sense, not because she deserves it, but just because. This person's love of mitzvahs is almost as if he was fulfilling his gut. And that's why they translate it as the word delight. But now you have an additional word, me'od. It's not just that he delights very much. It's like, can I just do another mitzvah? Can I make it even more beautiful? And that's the concept of hidul. Mitzvah, to make something look gorgeous because it's special for, right? And that's the whole notion, by the way, when I use the word Shabbos, right? That you start, oh, I'll put this aside for Shabbos. These are the dishes that I have for Shabbos. I'm going to make an extra new dish for Shabbos, and you do that kind of thing. And by the way, growing up in some respects was special. My grandmother they had grown up in poverty. And the sense of poverty, Yitzchak used to call it being Yerushalayim, Dika, meant that you were somehow a little bit miserly. After all, if you grew up and there was very little, you grew up that way. That was very miserly. But there were certain Shabboses when we had not one kugel, the classic Yerushalmi kugel, but we had two. And some really special Shabboses when we had three. Mm-hmm. What was the issue? How many Sifrei Torah would you take out? If they take out only one Sefer Torah, there's one. If they take out two, now needless to say, she has to know how many they would take out that Shabbos. You understand? So if you came to a Shabbos Hanukkah, there was a Zemale Kugel, there was a Lokshin Kugel, and there was a potato Kugel. And you got all three, and it was like, oh God, it was like, and everybody came, all the kids, grandchildren would come. You came for Kugel because today there's three. It was this kind of, we're going to do something more, something special, something extraordinary. That was the issue of chafetz me'od. So the hallmark, or better yet, the delight, the affirmation, the way I know that somebody is yare et Hashem is by what? By to what degree they actually do it with all of their being. What then is the blessings? What is going to be given to him? What are the happinesses that he's going to be rewarded? And from Pasuk Bet on, are things that he is going to earn and things that he's going to do. Gibor ba'aretz yezaro. His children will be giborim. Now, typically, the word gibor means heroic. Or strong. Manly. His children will be strong. That Mikra on the spot says, Meizuhu Gibor. Who is a Gibor? A Kovashet Yitzro. Somebody who can control his impulses. See, remarkable? You see, if you grew up in a house like that, you also know how to say no when you need to say no. You've presented that as an example, and therefore a promise that this is what your children will be. Your children will be there. Dor yesharim yevorach. If that's the case, they are strong people of strong character who know how to say no, who impose their own moral limits. They don't need to have punishment or somebody outside to tell them something is wrong. They know what's right and wrong. And more importantly, hu yevorach, he, this man, will be blessed with dol yesharim, with a generation of honest, straight people. Because if you grew up with that, you see that those are the values you grow up with. That is the way the Pashtunim would like to present this. Radak doesn't take the position of Chazal that says Ezehu Gibor. But he says instead, the heroes, the strong men, are people who are respected and that others fear crossing. Don't mess with that guy. Now, I can say, don't mess with that guy if that guy is a bully. Or if I know that that guy is an honorable man, a straight man. You don't mess with him. You don't try to make shenanigans with him. Don't offer him any business dealings that are shady. He won't go there. In fact, he might actually report you, believe it or not. Be careful. Don't go there. It ain't going to work. Says Radak, the reward of Ish Yireh Et Hashem is that his children go in his ways. And what does it mean that they are giborim? He says that people respect them, honor them, and they honor them for their integrity. They earn that kind of a reputation in the community. Chazal in the Yerushalmi in Kiddushin and in the Bavli in Eduyot says, no, it's a promise that your children will actually be strong. Not only strong in character, but strong in body. And they tell us as follows, this is the Gemara. B'chamisha dvarim adam zoche lebanav. There are five things that a person can earn merit and transmit it to his children. This is not only about DNA. It's interesting, it's seen as a reward. Bekoach. Now obviously if you were a strong man, chances are your son is going to have that DNA. They're telling us that this is not about the DNA that you are inheriting automatically, but that you merit. Because you're honest, you can transmit a merit that your children will merit. Koach, osher, wealth. Noi, beauty. Beauty is a gift. And we know that beauty gives a person charisma. Mm-hmm. People look at them. Chokhmah, wisdom, and long life. So sometimes you can be the good person and you won't get it, but your children will. And that's what the Gemara tells us there. So that is the schut that you get for the next one. Hence the next line, Hon ve'osher beveto. Ibn Ezra says the word gibor really should be translated not as strong physically, or it's the word meaning hero. It's the heroism. Who's my hero? His children will be seen as heroic. And heroic is depending on what their society respects, correct? Our heroes, unfortunately, in our society, those that are in people, are not necessarily what I would want my children to emulate. All right? Therefore, in whose eyes the father and the son will be blessed by whom? By a dor yesharim. In a generation of honest men, they will be considered heroes. In a generation of crooks, they won't be considered heroes. But it's a question of who's respecting you. In whose eyes are you a hero? Who treats this as a hero? So the promise made to a Yireh Hashem is that if there's a generation of honest men, your kids will be considered heroes. People magazine won't consider them heroes. In a generation that believes in the fast buck, they won't be considered heroes. Nevertheless, hon ve'osher beveto. Now the word hon means assets, and usually means non-liquid assets, like real estate. I know a lot of people in Israel who have apartments that are worth millions of dollars, but don't have enough to feed their families. You know, you can't eat the stones, and you can't really sell it because then you've got no place to live, because you can't find a replacement for it. So you can have hon without osher. Malbim explains, yesh on, she'en bo osher. There's assets in which there is no wealth. And I just explained to you how you can have unliquid assets that don't produce liquidity for you to be able to buy what you need for your family. But that's not what he's talking about. He's referring to something that Mishlei and Kohelet speak about. And that is that people who buy what they see as good investments and have lots of it. And whether it's liquid or not is irrelevant. They lock their things up in CDs. In Yiddish, they don't allow themselves to live. They're misers. They'll die and somebody else will consume it. And that's why he says, and he quotes here from Shlomo HaMelech, that God does not allow him to eat it. Mm-hmm. They accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. And I think you can think of people that you know that way, who don't allow themselves to live. They don't allow themselves to enjoy it. So what we're being promised is that a person who is Yirei Hashem and loves the mitzvahs, does what? He'll have both assets and knows how to use it. Knows how to use it so that there is wealth in his home. Remember what I mean by wealth? Wealth is how you use. Rabbi Shimshon Nefayel here says, wealth is how you use your money. Wealth is not where you stack it and where you stash it. Wealth is how you live and what you share and what you do. And what's the next line? Vitzitkato. And his tzedokah will stand for ever. Now you know this word because it comes from the following. Eze dvarim she'en lahem shiur. Ha'pea v'bikurim v'rayon l'gmilut chasadim. Right? Eze dvarim that you keep in this world. V'ha'keren kayemet lo le'olam haba. You're eating the interest and you, in this world, and the principle remains for the next world. So he has assets. He lives. He knows how to live in this world and in his household, meaning with his family and his wife and his children. He gives. He does this. And then he does more. Tzidkato, he gives tzedakah. And that will last for olam haba. That's exactly what Radak says. He says he knows how to live in this world. For himself, for his children. El farginsach the leaven. By the way, this lack of farginin sometimes extends not only to others, it extends to oneself. Misers are even misers for themselves.
Yes.
And he also has it, l'olam haba. Where do we know this? The Gemara already tells us. Aser kedei shetit asher. There's very few things that you can test God with. There's two places in the Gemara that tells us if you give myself, there's a promise it will come back to you and you'll become wealthy. How much can you give? Up to 1/5 of your income. 1/5 of your income. According to the Poskim today, Aaron Leib Steinman and others, we've never had such wealth in our lives. He says that the issue about don't give more than 1/5 is no longer valid. People can give up to a great deal more and still be within the measure of halacha. The question is the when you're giving one up to 1/5, if you're giving up to 1/5, is what's remaining there considered standard for what most people live. So what does one need to be able to live? Let's think about this, okay, for a moment. What does it cost to buy normal food for, you know, kosher food? What does it cost to pay full tuition for your children? The normal things that you do. So what would we say? But if a person's income is $1 million a year, I'm talking about his income, I'm not talking about his assets. He says that the notion somehow that he can only give up to one-fifth of that is absurd. Because what's he going to do with the rest of it? How many steaks can you eat? How many diamonds can you buy? What can you possibly do with that? On the contrary, you can continue to give and give far beyond that, okay? This is about tzedakah, and that tzedakah that he does and the way he does it withstands and lasts forever. What he does lasts forever. That's his legacy. That is what remains for him, okay? So we know that there's people who have hon but don't have osha. And he's promised that he will have both. But now comes the next line, and this one I want you to help me with. I wonder what the English. Okay. Zarach b'choshech. He glows in the darkness. Chanun v'rachum v'tzadik. And I'm asking you, who is the subject of these phrases? Who is the subject that he glows in the darkness and serves as a light to the Yesharim? Most of the Pirushim say it's Hashem, but has Hashem been mentioned as a subject?
No.
This is all about the Ish. Zar'o is his. Beito is the man's, right? Agav, by the way, Chazal immediately on the spot say, Ashrei Ish, Larbot Isha. On the spot, Chazal say this is not about a man, this is also about, it's Sami, it's not Ha'ish. If it's not Ha'ish the man, it's about a human, man or
woman.
So what does it mean that, where did God come become suddenly a subject? And Rashi on the spot recognizes, on Bederech HaPshat, it's the man. What do you mean that the man that glows in the darkness and serves as a light? When the going goes bad, when the world is in darkness, when hell breaks loose, he continues to be able to do what?
Shine.
Even smile. Even find the right, the goodness, even in the bad. And as a result, what does he do? He serves as a light for all honest people, for all upright people. They follow him. What is he then? What do they see him in? What is this light? Chanun, Rachum, Tzadik. Radak has a hard time with this. The others have a hard time with this to say about a man.
But you said that he's
the say Hashem. It's God. The reward is that God will be a light to him, shining onto him, even in the hard times, even in the darkness. Which is it? I found it very interesting that Yeshayahu, and by the way, we say this also in all the Kabbalistic writings, Al-Kabetz, Lechadodi, Kumi Ori, Uri Uri, Shir Dabeli. Get up, my light. Kvod Hashem Alaych Zarach. The glory, the essence of God shines on you. Where do we find God? In the eyes of the righteous. They reflect the goodness. You say, where did this come from? By their behavior in the worst of times, by their behavior when they would have easily been turned into animals, what do they show? That we're not merely Homo sapiens, that we were created in the image of. And a tzaddik of this kind continues to be chanun v'rachum v'tzaddik. Now I want to explain to you what I mean by this. When we speak about the choshech in the black times, in the hard times, it was few. But the few, even if they could be counted only on one hand, prove the case. When a person is reduced to horrific hunger, when a person is reduced to fear, and it's survival of whoever it is, right? That's why, by the way, Elie Wiesel called his book Night. That's the darkness. I remember how he describes the death of his father and the fact that he could take his father's portion of bread and eat it at that moment. For a moment, for one half a second there, it was almost happy that his father was not alive because he could have his
bread.
Piece of bread. Okay. But in the same way that some people were reduced that way, there were people who ended up, and they may have been sometimes ordinary people, not only, you know, great tzaddikim, who at that very same moment proved the other way around and gave the last piece of bread to somebody that they loved. And that proved the point. Or exchange themselves for somebody else when the count was, so that the other one will live and they will die. That they would lay their lives down. It wasn't only under extreme circumstances. In a situation like that, you suddenly had a light. The stories of heroism, albeit I know that sometimes people say, oh, you make too much of it, it was so rare. It makes no difference how rare it was. The fact that it even could happen, that somebody would build a sukkah between two barracks and the people would run through and quickly make the bracha and then go on and go, and that they would take the time to do so. That they would collect the little bit of margarine that maybe was given to them and make that into a Hanukkah candle and light the candle and burn it off instead of consuming it. That they dared to risk their lives to blow a shofar, and somebody found a shofar in the camp, and this did happen. Do you understand? The very notion, by the way, my son-in-law has in his possession, it was given to him when he turned 40 by his parents, a Sefer Balat Tanya, believe it or not only Chabad Hasidim study Tanya, written on thin tissue paper, handwritten from memory, in a labor camp, by his great uncle, from memory. There was an incredible story about somebody who wanted to make a bracha, wanted to still daven, and he said, and he lost his life for it. They beat him to death for davening, and they said, "Where was God?" And the answer that responded, I heard this from Harav Neugelshad, was, "Fools, think of the man who risked his life to daven." And gave up his life to be able to daven. You understand? I'm not asking where is God. I'm asking what then is man? Primo Levi committed suicide. Wrote the book Ecce Homo: What is Man? If this be man, and I could go to the other extreme and say, if somebody could still pick themselves up, dust themselves off, become human again, love again, build again. Ah, then what is man? You know what man is? Man has the capacity to imitate God, to be godlike, chanun, to have rachmonas, to care for somebody else, to give somebody else something that knowing that they'll never ever get it back in return, and to be righteous, tzaddik, to do the right thing no matter what the cost. Ah, then this person is all layisharim. I follow his light. You understand? Now, the Blush of the Rebbe in Yaffa Eliach's book called The Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, one of them was, of course, that he was already been working in the Plaszow camp for a while, and at that point was skin and bones, and periodically they would have been lined up naked for a selection. And he was really on his last, he thought he was on his last legs. When the commandant that was doing the inspection looked familiar, and as he crossed him, he recognized him. He had been his Volksdeutsche neighbor, and was now in the concentration camp system. And he turned to him and he said, "Good morning, Herr Miller." You see, the Bruges of the Rebbe in his good days when he was Rebbe used to take a morning constitutional for his health and walk around. Right. And as he walked down, he always said, "Good morning, good morning to his neighbors, Goyim, Yidden, whoever they were. He followed the dictates of Chazal. They tell us about the great Tanoim that not one person ever preceded by saying good morning to them. Whether it was a servant, whether it was a goy, whether it was a maiden, they spoke. Lida today, we have a new kind of thing where you indicate how important you are by not answering when somebody says good, you know, good Shabbos or good morning to you. They actually were the ones that always said good morning. And that's why Chazal say, Heve mekabel kol ha'adam beseder panim yafot. Every human being, no matter who he is, goy or Eve, go down and say hello, smile. Hello. So he said, good morgen, Helminna. He didn't recognize him, but he recognized the voice. There was no beard, he's shaven, you need to imagine what this looks like. So he pulled him out of the line, pretending like he's taking him for special punishment, pulled him into the barracks like he's going to beat him to death, which is what he would have done for somebody else, and saved his life. That was the moral of the story about lighting your face up to every human being. You can get through even to the cruel. You understand? By the good morning. The second story is that among the amusements that the camp commandant had was on Sundays they would have special exercises. Among them was long jump. He prided himself, and you can see that in if you saw the movie, Schindler's List, where he used to stand up from his window as a marksman and he used to shoot.
Who's he, Esther?
There would be a big pit, and he would tell them to jump over the pit. And of course, if they couldn't jump over, if they were too weak, if they were too whatever, and the piles of bodies continued, and that would be the Sunday exercises. So standing on the other, next to the Tujibah, there was a man who considered himself, quote, a free thinker, not believe in God, where's God now? And he turned to the Rebbe and he says, Rebbe, let's just chuck it in right now. We can just walk and end our misery. And why even bother jumping? Walk to the center of the pit and end it. And the Rebbe says, no, we are commanded to live. He says, how are we going to do it? He says, hold on to me, kids. We're going to make it across. And they ran and they jumped and they made it across. And the young man turned to him and says, Rebbe, you are so old. How could you do it? And he said, I envisioned my ancestors and I held on to their coattails and I jumped across. He says, but young man, how did you do it? He says, and I held on to you. All la yisharim. The tzaddik is a light unto everyone else, to that generation. He shows them a way. That's the whole point of it. That's why Rashi tells us, who asmo kivyachol ne'asar lahem or. He himself is as if he became a light. You are my light. You prove to the ears in. Therefore, what is it? Tov ish chonen umalve. Who is good? Good is the man who has mercy and gives a loan. Some say it's umalve is or gives a loan. Chonen Tachanunim is giving a matnat chinam, gives a gift without expecting anything in return. But to those who are too ashamed to take charity, he gives a loan, knowing maybe that they'll never ever be able to, but if it gives him more dignity to treat it as a loan, then you'll give it to them as a loan, okay? And that's what Mitzudot El Rashi says. He shows this caring for the ani'im, that he allows them to maintain their dignity. But at the same time, yichalkel dvarav b'mishpat. And now our question is, what is dvarav? Interestingly, some of the modern Pashtanim means, and he also measures his words, not only his money this way, by the law. In other words, it's not just how he gives, but it's also the good word that he says, how he speaks to them, how he talks to them. And they see the two sides of the verse connected. Not so Radak, not so Rashi, not so Mitzudot. Instead, they take it differently. They say, to those that he needs to, he gives. To those he needs to, He gives a loan. Those who would rather take a loan, he gives them a loan. However, he, kalkala in modern Hebrew means economics. He measures, he calculates his business. Dvarav means his things. Not only his diburav, his words, but all of his business. In other words, to whom do I give? When do I give? What's my favorite causes? And is there cases where I don't give? Do you give to a panhandler who's probably going to use it for drugs or alcohol? Do you give a loan only what you're willing to lose and what you're able to lose? And that's why Radak tells us as follows. When he's giving charity and when he's managing his household, it's all done by law, by reasoning, by thinking about what you're going to do. And what is his words? And I need to quote this. A person should never think that his job is to become an ascetic and keep himself away from all the pleasures and the lusts of this world from it, completely. Absolutely not. On the other hand, he should not indulge like a glutton. He should not go haywire. Ve'lo yarbe bahem. Ela b'midah shava. Lifi ha-mishpat. In the same way that you give for others is the way you should be giving for yourself and your family. Mitachesben. You have to live with a cheshben. Why are you giving? To whom are you giving? What is your rationale? You understand? You have to think about these things. And then he goes and says, similarly, when he gives to the poor people, lo yitfazel kol kach, he shouldn't be so generous that later on he becomes needy. V'chen b'shar dvarav, he says, including dibur, including how you speak.
Watch what you say.
Watch what you say. Think when to say a good word. Think about what you're going to do and what its impact is going to be. And if that's the case, ki le'olam lo yimot, he will never collapse. Not financially, not socially. Le'zecher olam yiyet tzadik. He will remain as a remembrance forever. In other words, now that's why we say zecher tzadik livracha. Mishmua ra'a lo yira. I love the play on this sound. He hears bad news or a bad rumor, he's not afraid of it. So now Radak asks, even if he hears something bad about one of his kids or his relative, or somebody that's far away that he cares about, or that he hears that there is a planned attack by his enemies against him, about Nishtibarash, he doesn't get shaken. Nachon libo, his heart is set. Batuach Bashem. He trusts in God. And Radak says, not in his wealth, not in his strength, not in all the people that like him or that do business with him. They'll all fail him. Only in Hashem. And he repeats, Samuch libo v'lo yira. His heart relies on him and therefore he is not afraid. He's not afraid. Ad asher yireh betzarav, until he sees his adversaries. And the word is missing. Sees his adversaries what? Nothing to be afraid of until it doesn't actually happen. Stop hearing it. Or until he sees their downfall. He says that until he gazes upon his adversaries. If I'm going to start getting scared all the time, walking around, oh, you know, we're afraid, we're going to keep on going here. They're having attacks, they're having a day. You know what? They got you already. We've got to be strong. The tzaddik who has betochen does not do this. Pizar natan la'evyonim. Pizar means he spread it out, he scattered and gave to the poor. Sidkato omedet la'ad. And his righteousness will withstand forever. Karno tarum bikavot, and his horns will rise in honor in this world and in the next. In contrast, Rasha yireh v'ka'as, the evil, the wicked, they will see him walking around like this, and they'll rage. Shinav yacharok, they gnash their teeth. The namas, and they melt, like your heart melts, you know, and they become afraid of you. Ta'avat resha'im, the lust of the resha'im, will be eradicated. What they really want to do to you is going to happen to them, but it's going to actually be, it'll be wiped out. There won't be any lust anymore. It'll all be over. Rabbi Shimshon Resayim here says, Adaraba. He says, the tzaddik, especially in times of danger, from disease, from enemies on the outside, that's when he begins to recognize that there ain't nobody to rely on. Ein lanu al mi lismoch, el al avinu shebashamayim. There's nobody to rely on. And he holds on to that.